Tuesday, July 28, 2026, and I call the Wrangell Assembly to order. First of all is the Pledge of Allegiance led by Assemblymember Powell. Please rise.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic
for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Assembly members Powers, Mock, Yeager,
here.
Dalrymple,
here.
Powell,
here.
DeBoard,
here.
And Mayor Gilbert.
Here. Thank you. For ceremonial matters tonight, we have a certificate of service awarded to April Hutchison for her service and dedication on the Planning and Zoning Commission from September 2014 through June 2026. We thank her for her service, and there's a position open on Planning and Zoning Commission. Please submit your letters of interest to the clerk at wrangell.com.
No, clerk at wrangell.com.
Okay, thank you. All right. Persons to be heard, item three. We have two sets of correspondence for the assembly included in your pack.
I don't have anybody signed up.
All right. Is there anyone present who'd like to speak under persons to be heard? I see none. We're going to move right along. Amendments to the agenda. Any assembly member offering any amendments?
Madam Mayor, yes. I would like to propose an amendment to the agenda. And I would propose that item 13A, consideration to donate those two lots, 1 and 10, be postponed until there's more information, especially from the tribe, on the current situations there, and that some more documentation is available from what was presented in the package.
All right. Thank you, Assemblymember Dalrymple. On item 13A, the consideration of land dedicated to WCA, we do have two motions on the agenda item. I would prefer that we go through with that if there's no objection by any other assembly member, and not take it off the agenda. Is there any assembly member that has any other concern about that? All right.
Can I comment on that?
Yes.
So to Assembly Member Dalrymple's point, that if that item is considered with one of the two motions, a motion can be made at any time to postpone that item.
Correct. In fact, you can amend the motion to propose.
No, you don't want to amend them. No, you just can say, you can just amend them. You don't need to amend the motion. All you have to do is motion to postpone till August 25th.
Right.
Largely what I'll be recommending tonight, but I do want to have a conversation. We had a discussion with some of the tribe board members yesterday, and I think it's worth kind of giving some context, and that'll kind of lay the table.
Okay. Is that agreeable, Assembly Member Dalrymple?
Not by preference, but yes, I'll agree.
Thank you. Conflict of interest. Any assembly member have any conflict? All right, hearing none, let's go to consent agenda. I need a motion.
Move to approve the consent agenda as submitted. Second.
Okay, motion by Powell, second by Yeager. Any discussion? Okay, poll vote, please.
Assembly members Yeager?
Yes.
Dalrymple?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
DeBoard?
Yes.
And Mayor Gilbert?
Yes. Borough manager's report. Embedded within that item are several reports from directors. Borough manager.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So I'd like to thank the directors that submitted the reports. We had the Nolan Center report, finance director, parks and rec, and then three guys viewing budget. We got expense and disbursements. We got receivables for the month. So thanks to Robbie for getting those uploaded. I also want to mention that we have our final FY27 adopted budget. You guys approved the resolution with the numbers at the fund level, but that's your comprehensive budget for the year, about 180 pages. So it's a big lift from the finance team. And administrative staff. So thanks to everybody that was involved, namely Robbie for getting that done. It's a big lift. So on his first time through. I want to kick it off first tonight. I'm going to kick it over to Director Wader to talk about the water main break today, because I know that's a hot topic and we just got done with some of the repairs. And then I'm going to pivot to him for the dump hours, because we talked about dump hours last assembly meeting. That's the direction you guys provided, and I'll seek some further direction.
So we had a small water main break last night, actually, on McKinnon Street. That one was just a service saddle. We got that one repaired pretty quickly. But this morning at about 6 o'clock, I got a call about water main break on Case Avenue. And basically, it was on the stub out that goes to the hydrant right there on Angerman's Corner on Case Avenue, right where we put the mirror up here for freight and trucking and everything. And, you know, in my opinion, it was kind of poor installation. Basically, they used a band that you would not normally use. Normally, you would use what's called like an MJ coupler, where it's going to bolt together and it's solid, and that's how it's normally done. I think what happened here is the pipes were a little bit disjointed when they installed it, and they didn't fully line up, and so they probably weren't able to get like that mega lug to work, and so they basically used like a cheap coupler, what we would use to kind of band things together type of thing when they installed it decades ago. So that failed here, and the shutdown took a little bit longer than expected because those pipes were disjointed. You know, we weren't real sure whether or not we were going to be able to get that with a band, and we ended up having to change to a different style of band that we carry. And luckily, we were able to kind of suck those things down and get it back together. Our alternative would have been to put a valve in right there, and we would have had to go back tomorrow and dig that up again and connect it back to that hydrant. So I think, you know, hopefully this isn't a sign of things to come here on Case Avenue. We've been, you know, fairly lucky, knock on wood, with Case Avenue in the 6 years that I've been in this job. We really only had a forced main sewer break on that road. Now, we did get everything fixed up here this afternoon, patched back up. We got it covered. You know, it's going to take us a while to get the concrete repaired on that, given the freight operations and everything on Case Avenue because of the McKinnon Street shutdown here right now. But for the community, what was kind of unusual about today's water main break is just the size of the area that we had shut down. You know, normally we're kind of able to isolate it to a specific road, basically. And today's water main break was on the low pressure system, which is basically all of downtown. We don't have a way to backfeed that system, and so that's why we basically had to shut everything off. Now, you know, staff and I have discussed a way for us to put in a what's called a PRV, which is a pressure reducing valve that we could possibly put in on the north end of town, where we could loop it around the airport loop and feed downtown. Now, that's, you know, going to be a little bit of a project for us to do, but that's something we're going to look into. My guess is years ago, they thought, wow, we'll just shut it down when we need to and get it repaired. It won't be a big problem, because that's, you know, I think in a lot of places, when you have those different pressure zones, there should be a PRV anytime you have a change in a pressure zone. So that should already be there. We don't have that. So I think it's possible for us to basically, you're adding in like a bypass is what you're doing. And in that bypass, you have this pressure reducing valve. Because if we went from high pressure to low pressure, we'd be blowing everybody's system out, you know, including our own. We don't want to do that, right? So, because we had to shut down such a large area of town here today, and because it was, you know, a fairly extended shutdown, we have had to do a lot of water flushing here this evening, and staff are still working on it here now. In fact, I'm getting notifications here as we speak of them going around town here and continuing to flush. I think so far we flushed over 200,000 gallons just in the last couple hours, trying to turn the system over. We still do have some reports of brown water. So our guys are out trying to do what we can with it here tonight, trying to get that to clear up. We're going to keep running it here as long as we can. If tanks get too low, we may have to regroup for tomorrow morning. But my recommendation to people of the public is to flush your own internal system until your water clears up. Don't drink the water if it looks brown or discolored, and continue to flush it until it clears. And we're going to continue to do the same thing with our system and, you know, look into longer term solutions to hopefully mitigate a similar issue in the future. Case Avenue ain't getting any younger. So, you know, I hope that we don't have this. I hope it doesn't turn into the next St. Michael's, basically.
Yeah. Thank you, Tom. So also last night I was driving past the McKinnon Street project and seeing all that water spouting out of the main just coincidentally. And I thought the neighbor kids were creating a swimming hole or something. And turns out We did have a water main break there, so Public Works has been working through those. I really thank the team and Tom for addressing those, and very timely that we're replacing McKinnon, because if that was breaking while exposed, it's certainly going to break in the future. So a good indication that we're headed in the right direction on replacement of underground infrastructure.
On that note, with that one last night, it was a service saddle that broke loose and the hardware was gone. Now, my guess is that's been packed underneath that road for the last 50, 60 years, and that's probably a lot of what's holding it in place. They exposed that rotten shot hardware, broke loose finally, and that's what happened there last night. So that was a one-inch service that basically runs into Cow Alley, feeds multiple properties, is what last night.
So I'm going to give Tom a lead-in to some assembly direction I got from the last assembly meeting, which is sending from Assembly Member Powell, wanting to increase the hours at the sanitation facility over lunchtime during at least the weekdays. So Tom has crafted a memo to me, but in layman's terms, Tom, kind of describe some of the options and the impacts to our operation.
Yeah. So, you know, I think two-thirds of the time, this is going to be fairly reasonable and practical given the resources that we have. But there, the other third of the time, like it's going to require, you know, something to break or something to give, whether that's, you know, additional resources or we just cannot accommodate that lunchtime schedule, you know, every single day. For example, Saturdays, we only have one person there. That person has to be able to take a lunch break. So we would either have to have somebody come in for a call out, or we would have to, you know, basically put another staff member there for that person to be able to go take a lunch break. So that's Saturdays. Kind of in the same vein, you know, we've got three staff there right now, and then two of them have been there for 20 years. And so, you know, there's a lot of PTO basically. And so when we're down to two guys, we're just limited in resources. A lot of times we can have somebody out on the truck doing collections. Then you got one guy there trying to man the desk and run the baler and, you know, load the scrap van now that we have to do that because we lost Shorty and those guys, and, you know, manage the household hazardous waste, you know, storage and handling and the burn pit. And, you know, you see where I'm going with this. And so, you know, I think when there are people gone on PTO or on Saturdays, it makes it more difficult for us to cover that. And I would also say that right now we are fortunate to have three staff with CDLs. That's not always the case. In fact, you know, since we have added that third position in sanitation, we have only had three people with a CDL up until about a month ago. Prior to that, it didn't exist. You know, it was kind of an entry-level position where we were working somebody towards that. And the two previous people in that position moved on to other roles within the borough. And so, you know, having the staff team that we got now, like we have ultimate flexibility in terms of all three guys can drive the truck. All three guys have that CDL. That may not be the case long-term, but we could also make that adjustment, I guess, as we go and as staff things change. But just a couple other things here, just looking at my memo here to you, Mason, that I just want to make sure I don't miss anything here. You know, there are some other long-term implications or concerns, but, you know, some of that's related to like our wastewater system. And if we have to implement, you know, some sort of industrial treatment there, which I think is a possibility in like the 10-year plan. So I don't think we need to get too far into that here now, but that could be, you know, another impact. Is that something that would be run by wastewater staff, by sanitation staff? Like that's something I haven't, you know, fully figured out or fleshed out or understood how that's handled other places. And so, you know, to summarize, like, I think if we were trying to provide this coverage all the time, like there's definitely going to be added resources and added expense, primarily for Saturdays or primarily for when people are out on PTO and we're down staff. And then, you know, the last thing that I would just say here is that currently we are open 36 hours a week with three staff. In Skagway, they are open 8 hours a week. In Haines, they're open 18 hours a week. Kloak, which handles Craig and Kloak, they're open 19 hours a week. Petersburg is open 21 hours a week with four staff. And then Sitka, Juneau, and Ketchikan are all open about 45 to 48 hours. Ketchikan, I think, had 11 people on staff, not including their drivers. So if we went with this lunchtime coverage, we would basically be at 42 hours a week with three staff, relative to Petersburg's 21 with four staff and Ketchikan's 45 with 11 staff. And so, like I said, I think there's a lot of days we can accommodate this, but I don't think it's practical for us to do that on every single day without additional resources. And so at the very least, I would propose it's like a Monday through Friday thing.
So just kind of update on that. That could get further direction from the assembly and their assembly business, but I wanted to tell them to speak to that item a little bit because it's something we've been discussing.
So.
Thank you. And Tom, another thing we discussed during the workshop is finding an alternate storage spot for snow other than the Kyle Langerman playground. We'd like to rehab that playground. And then the other thing I want to mention for the public is you do notices to the public via Nixle, and I would encourage everyone to subscribe to Nixle. So that's how the public learns about water main breaks. And unfortunately, our water distribution system is in pretty sad shape in some places. And that's why when we commit to doing a section of road a year, we do the underground utilities.
Yeah.
Rather than just paving over it.
Every piece of plastic pipe we can get in the ground, the better off we're going to be in. And we need to keep chipping away at that because, it's an aging system. And so, you know, I think today, given the severity of the break and the problems that led to the Nixle was great here today. And I think it reached a lot of people. You know, not everybody's on social media and getting those updates, you know, as we typically kind of send those things out. And then with regards to snow storage, yes, that it definitely needs to be a topic of conversation. We are in a tough spot because we have lost a lot of snow storage areas over the years. And if I was going to say there was a gold standard, and we're not going to get there, but if there was one, look at what the city of Valdez does for their snow storage. They have a very, very strict zoning application to that to make sure that they have areas to go with that. Now, granted, we're not them. They get way more snow than we do, but yeah. You know, we've got three areas basically downtown, and for us to reduce that is going to have an operational implication for sure.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it. So going to get into the manager's report tonight. Got it up on the screen, which is a new development. I'll try to keep the agenda on the screen for folks tonight as well. I want to talk a little bit about kind of my communications plan. One of the things that we talked about in the goals for the year was expanding communications to the assembly and to the public. Director Thomas has done a great job on her economic development newsletter, and so that's something that people continue to subscribe to. Does a good job of talking about all the different things. Obviously, we rebranded ourselves. We got a big presence on social media, all different outlets of social media, and we already work with Sentinel and KSTK. But my plan is to, I've been doing the FYI Fridays to the assembly. Those are based off of all the tasks that I work through with the directors each week, which I summarize those in emails to the directors each week. Come up with the FYI Friday, give you guys an update on what happened this week, everything that we're working on. And then those four FYI Fridays will aggregate into a comprehensive manager's report. So the format you see tonight will be consistent. I'm only going to do one manager's report per month because, as you'll soon find out, they're quite long when I talk to you about all the pertinent things that are going on in the community. And so hopefully the assembly's okay with that approach. Just having one manager's report that talks about the whole month of operations, a little bit more comprehensive and easier for me to pull off. The other thing we'll be doing starting tomorrow is the manager's minute, which will be a 60-second video we show to the public each week, or at least each month. We're going to start each month, and it might be more frequent than that, but highlighting some of the projects going along across the borough, some of the initiatives, and that was something the assembly tasked me with in my previous executive session. So just a little bit of a comment. We can go ahead and scroll down. The first part of the manager's report is just kind of a executive memo talking or table of contents first, and that's everything that we're talking about. And then it'll scroll down into a letter to the community talking about what we accomplished in July, what we seek to accomplish in the coming months. We can skip all that for tonight and we'll run into it. So first off, we had a really meaningful, go and scroll down to the economic development report, Kim. We had a really meaningful fly-in with JAG Alaska or JAG Marine Group and Burleson Group, ADA, SEPA, Representative Bynum attended. We had, 60 plus folks in the audience at the Nolan Center for a community update. We had several folks on the line as well. We had another fly-in with JAG present and some other representatives across the EDA grant spectrum. That was over 100 attendance at the Nolan Center. So certainly the shipyard is drawing some attention to the community. It's a very well-supported initiative. It speaks to a lot of the planning that we've done out there for that site. It's like a 95% five issue, if I would characterize it. Everybody I talk to gets really excited about the shipyard because it's the most optimism we have for job creation in Wrangell, but also the region. This is something that could quite possibly generate 500 jobs for the community. And then you bring in all the families, you got full schools, you're maximizing economies of scale of our infrastructure, which should lower prices and taxes and all the above. So anyway, we had all those folks come down and participate in this community update. We also reviewed the technical design. We've reached the 15% milestone of design on the site. And if you guys will recall, Jag and us split design costs. We spent $500,000 design money. They 550, they contribute $200,000, and we have gotten to the design milestone. So if you go and scroll down, Kim, the rendering here is part of this design. This is an image of what the shipyard would look like, highlighting the ship lift that's capable of 34,000 tons. It'd be the largest ship lift in North America, top 10 facility in the world, which seems crazy for Wrangell to pull off, but this is modeled off after a site in Jacksonville, Florida. It's a BAE facility. Currently, they have two Arleigh Burke destroyers sitting in their yard right now. They don't have a big fab shop, but huge, huge revenue driver, over 1,100 jobs at that yard, and it's almost exactly the same dimensions as our mill property. Great need for this project across the West Coast and the United States. We have the ability to pull it off in Alaska, and it's an opportunity for us to meet the need on national security interests, reduce capacity for the commercial fleet. And so all told, where are we going to go from here? We have all the stakeholders involved. It's a matter of achieving funding for the next milestone. We're going to work in partnership with ADA, which we've signed an NDA with ADA to pursue different financing alternatives to get full 100% design and permitting. We believe once we get to that, we have the private capital and partners to pull this investment off. It may look like a pretty colorful capital stack. It could include private capital. It could be a combination of state and federal loan monies. It could be state and federal grants. It could be equity pooled together. So there's a lot of different forms, and we'll be investigating what's going to be the right mix and ownership structure as we move forward with this project. So that's the shipyard. Right there is a picture of the design of layout conceptually of the shipyard. You can see the Alaska Marine Lines facility that's in the left corner in red there. And then you have the ship lift and the core JAG operations. Up to the northeast section of the lot is the tank farm, which Kim doesn't know what northeast is. It's there we go. There?
Okay, sorry.
No, you're okay. That's a tank farm. So
it's your left
facility. And I would play the animation. I know we don't have time, but we will have a press release going out tomorrow showcasing an animation of the whole facility, how the ship lift actually works and the whole shipyard in operation, which is quite impressive. It's going to garner a lot of national attention and interest in this project. And we really believe we can pull this off in a reasonable timeline. The other thing I want to mention is that the EDA grant that we submitted, I'm getting the sense that over the next month we'll hear back. We've gotten some positive reads on where we stand on that. So again, that's a $50 million application. EDA reserves the right to fund, you know, one, two, or all the components that we submitted for in our portfolio. But that was a $62 million project and a $50 million grant award to be the largest in Wrangell's history. If we pulled it off, we would have garnered $130 million in grant funds competitively over the last 2.5 years, which there is no other municipality in the state of Alaska that has accomplished that, which is pretty remarkable.
For the community, would you go over the parts of the EDA
grant? I will. Yep. So real briefly, there's three component parts of that EDA portfolio, amounting to $62 million. We have a floating dock component being added to city dock because not all visitors. Go ahead and keep scrolled up, Kim.
Back up.
Yeah. So the EDA grant for component number one is the floating dock modification to city dock because we can't accommodate all vessel types currently. There's some vessels that their gangways don't align with our city dock. That is one component bolstering the visitor industry. Number two is the water flume up in the reservoir, redirecting water that otherwise doesn't hit our upper reservoir into that reservoir, increasing capacity and resiliency. And then the third component, which is by far the shining star of the portfolio, is the shipyard subdivision. So extending water sewer power, providing backup power, and expanding stormwater infrastructure and putting the right-of-ways. This is all happening in conjunction with our PIDP grant application that we got back in 2023 for $421,000. P&D is working on that project in concurrence with Burleson's effort on the shipyard design. So there's alignment between those two entities as we work through this. And the third component is AML is actually working through the design of their facility as well. So I'll get to that here in a little bit. So that's the Deepwater Port and a little update on the shipyard. Next one is Alaska Marine Lines cargo. So you can go ahead and scroll down, Kim. We have reached the 50% design milestone, and this is actually something that AML has paid for completely. This is a picture. It's kind of a hard to see on the screen, but essentially this is the, you can go ahead, please. This is the barge and ramp facility and the abutment being designed at the 50% level at the mill property. We plan to get to the 100% design level by about the next 12 months. And we've already, AML just started the permitting process with the Corps yesterday. So we got about a year before we're construction ready. In the meantime, we will be compiling cost estimates. AML is working on a cheaper approach to devising a cost estimate because they're going to do onshore drilling to see what the bottom looks like, as opposed to going offshore. It's really expensive. It's about $350,000 just to bring a test pile rig in here and drive some test holes to see. We should be reasonably assured that we're in good shape, given there used to be a docking facility basically off the bow of that barge in the picture. So we feel pretty confident that the cost estimates will reflect that. But looking at a proposed $7 million project that Alaska Green Lines would construct, and ownership structure and all that to happen later. So that's a little bit about that development. Want to highlight the structure partnership, which is kind of a new evolving industry in Wrangell. So Structure is a SCADA assembly and manufacturing company that has recently been developed in conjunction with their sister company, AK Automations, who developed SCADA software. And so they are looking to, and are pursuing, purchasing the Audison's building, a storage building where the lumber is stored. It's a 10,000 square foot facility where they're establishing a manufacturing presence for SCADA components. And for those that aren't familiar with SCADA, I'm probably not going to give a crazy overview, but it's a software that utility users and decision makers and other oil and gas and mining industry all use to manage and seek oversight of their operations. It can even have influence over their operations from a desktop. So for example, CECO's got a SCADA system. You can see everything that's going on. You can see the reservoir levels at Tyee Lake, at Swan Lake. You can see the megawatts you're burning on every feeder system. And nowadays you can actually make decisions on, we're going to shut this feeder off. We're going to change feeder one, feeder two, those types of things from a SCADA platform. So they're going to actually be developing components, the PLCs and the sensors that actually connect to the SCADA system, which they also have their own software. It's a huge industry. This isn't something that is just specific to utilities alone, but it's a huge market that this will serve, and they're really cutting edge technology. So we're really excited to welcome them to the Wrangell community. Again, we don't have a huge manufacturing presence here in Wrangell, if at all. So this will be a new thing that's really on the tech side too. So there's gonna be some software development. They're looking to create 8 to 20 jobs here in the next new year. They're going to start to retrofit the facility here this fall. So exciting development for us locally. Going on to Aldertop, which we're going to talk a little bit in relation to WCA tonight during the assembly. We continue to look at different alternatives for how we get to Aldertop phase two. So yeah, thank you. This is great right here. Phase one is what we've already sold. Everything that's not in yellow down there was part of phase one. All lots have sold. I believe it's 18 lots altogether. Is that right? Or is it 20?
20
lots that sold. And then phase two is above that, the blue line. One of the things I wanted to mention, and the assembly's probably not super clear on, is those purple marked lots got utilities extended to them under phase one. That was a decision we made. We cut some scope in phase one. And in return, we added some scope to connect some utilities to some additional lots. We will be surveying all of phase two subdivision here in the fall. I believe November was the timeline that Director Thomas had indicated. And after that survey is complete and those four lots are appraised, we can go in and issue approval resolution for sale and start advertising. And because there's been a ton of interest in lots, we are in a housing crisis here in Wrangell, and that was the intention of the subdivision. Also like to say, I had an awesome meeting with WCA yesterday. I know that Member Johnson, part of the Wrangell Cooperative Association Board, was a part of that meeting, as well as their other board members. And we talked a lot about different alternatives to the conveyance of those two residential lots for Memorial Park, which we're very supportive of. I'm going to reserve kind of that conversation more for the item tonight, but do want to say it was a nice conversation. I think that we can work through that together in partnership. Also, I want to just say on Aldertop, we are looking at potentially for phase two, looking at joint venture opportunities instead of soliciting for state and federal grant funds to pull off this subdivision. We may partner with the private sector and do a joint equity arrangement whereby we do the power installation, they do the water, sewer, stormwater installation, and prorated split profits based off the sale. And there would have to be an agreed upon market rate for each lot, but that's the key to a quick and successful construction of the second phase of the subdivision. The whole point is to get lots out to the community for building. This is just in today, the very exciting, the newly released 2026 Southeast Alaska Business Climate Report really showcases Wrangell. We're actually on the cover of it. Out of all the Southeast communities, we took the cake for business sentiment across Southeast Alaska, which is a marked improvement from previous periods. We used to be, for like the last two decades, we were like low man on the stick there for almost 20 years. We were last ranked community or second to last in terms of business sentiment. So this is a really positive report. It shows all the different economic development that's viewed optimistically here in Wrangell, and a lot of the opportunities that exist in terms of infrastructure replacement and the amount of grant funding we brought in. So this is really cool. One of the quotes is Wrangell stands out as a dramatic shift in sentiment. It ranks all the communities in that. So I'll make sure that that report's linked in my manager's report so people can read that. This comes also as some encouraging news from this last year that our population actually grew for the first time in 15 years. So I'd like to think that's an indication of a lot of our our policies are working. While it was only 1%, we were declining at a rate of 1.5% for on average for the last 15 years. So a nice improvement that maybe we've stopped the bleeding and we're going the right direction. We also had a very encouraging Southeast economic conditions report highlighting the growth in our healthcare sector, the tourism visitor industry sector, and a diversification of our economy here locally. So three different independent reports, not that we develop, but Southeast develops, that really highlights Wrangell. So I thought that was really exciting to see. Again, want to talk about WCA briefly. Had a great meeting again with them, talked about the alternatives to a memorial park, and we were super supportive of pulling that off. We want to be a good partner in doing that with them. We also talked about me being a part of the August 4th meeting that they have at the Carbon Shed. So I'm going to go there and kind of give a thorough update, although the people that are associated with WCA in the audience are probably going to get the double dipping because I'll probably regurgitate some of this stuff. However, I am going to propose a work plan, and I have proposed work plans in the past, articulating some of our goals around transportation, tourism, and trail infrastructure. I want to support their efforts. It's been bolstering their tourism department. I want to look at ways to expand trail infrastructure to culturally significant sites, and we want to partner on different transportation for all community members. So really good sentiment out of those meetings. I think the key with WCA as we move forward is we want to hold each party accountable. We want to set a list of goals and commit to following through on them. And here's everybody's actionable steps to do that. So they've had a new shift in administration and board composition. We have certainly had a big dramatic shift in borough trajectory. And, you know, there's been periods where we've worked really well together. There's been periods where we haven't, but that's all history in my mind. We've got new people in leadership and we really want to work together. A strong tribe is a strong spirit. Going on to Mill Creek. Mill Creek is one of our entitlement land holdings. And I've talked recently with the Stickeen Sportsman Association, along with the Forest Service, along with the Friends of Our Park group, about asking the sportsmen to consider deviating from their plans to construct a cabin at Real West, but instead constructing a cabin with us at Mill Creek. We already own the property. It's a heavily recreated site. It's not right at Mill Creek, but it's right in close proximity. And it correlates with the former Sea Trails program that we were trying to pull off and as part of Southeast Conference's initiative. And I know that a lot of folks had some interest in that initiative back in the day. Sea Trails is basically a concept where there's trail infrastructure across the island, the mainland, all the way around, circumventing, circumnavigating a Wrangell Island. And there should be a combination of like tent platforms and cabins that interlink the Forest Service and borough property. So it's a great draw for recreational users, for subsistence users, and for the visiting industry too. So I sent the president of the Sportsman Association a letter for their board to consider working on this together. We are planning on some timber for our entitlement lands, but this is also another use that we've identified for the Mill Creek area. And I'll be curious to see if the board's got an appetite for it, but I talked to some of them, Howard Powell, who's been a ranking member of the sportsman for some time, and we'll see what they come up with. So kind of an exciting new opportunity. Related to the Forest Service, we did talk about the Sea Trail program. We talked about the Chugach. They are optimistic that they will have a contract in place in 2027 for construction of the pavilion, or the shelter rather. That might be changed from the existing design. It might be a little bit less and pared down. There won't be a walk around component to it. So it might be something where we trench down so the boats at a lower level than visitors are standing on. They'd be maybe looking at the rail boat and we'd shift the orientation in conjunction with our waterfront master plan. I'll be composing a letter to leadership at the Forest Service to expedite repairs of the Roosevelt Dock facility and the Earl West Road that has been washed out, because those are heavily recreated areas, especially as we get in towards hunting and subsistence cycles here. So those will be new releases from my office here soon. And then we also have a work session that we want to get on the books on good neighbor authority and how we can partner on some of the Forest Service upcoming timber sales. And part of that will utilize infrastructure that we acquired in our land exchange. So that's an exciting opportunity. We continue to move forward with our downtown waterfront fill and abutment design with P&D. We've reached the 65% milestone, and we just had a productive work session showcasing the revised waterfront master plan and we developed here in this year and submitted to EDA as part of our component project portfolio. We plan to fill out our waterfront starting in September, October of this year to be completed by March. This will be full fill all the way from the mill dock abutment to the old barge ramp abutment. So several acres of new fill for economic development, everything ranging from expansion of the Marine Service Center, installation of a community park with a new pavilion, and some commercial district for retail and servicing the visitor industry, among other accommodations. So got some good feedback from the assembly, engaged some staff on that. We will come back to the assembly when we are ready with 100% design for bidding up that package. Update on American Cruise Line, which is part of our waterfront fill project. They are looking to construct their docking facilities in concurrence with our construction project for the fill. So they'll be driving pile and installing the Empress, which is a picture as of today down in Ketchikan. Might have been from yesterday because it seems like they have had a lot more bluer skies if it was today. And this is the JAG Marine Ketchikan Shipyard. It's got it sandblasted and painted. This will be the docking facility. It was the American Empress. And for those that were around in the previous segment, this is that picture in the slideshow. So this will be part of the docking facility. So that's moving forward into construction. City dock was damaged last week. The Queen Elizabeth didn't tend to the lines appropriately and torqued one of our breasting dolphins. You can see that in that lower left-hand picture. The actual breasting dolphins completely torqued and potentially pulled out of the mud there at the bottom. Very expensive piece of infrastructure. Replacement of something like that's a couple million bucks these days. The catwalk out to the breasting dolphin was pulled away from the main walk there. And so there's a problem that we have to address in the very least there as well. So we have a claims adjuster coming down. We're in contact with their legal team at Kennard, and we'll be working through the issue. We do have the dock fully insured. So regardless of what happens with that, we do have insurance, and we will pursue remedy here in the near future once the claims adjuster comes down. We continue to work through the Wrangell Harbor Basin engineering and design project. P&D was just selected as the design firm that we're going to move forward with full design on. Again, we got $25 million in competitive RAISE grant, formerly known as RAISE grant funds, but now build grant funds to proceed with this project. This is a complete replacement of the Inner Harbor, Reliance and Standard Oil float and pilings, all replaced, electrical infrastructure. There's a new layout selected for each of the harbors, including parking lot for Inner Harbor. This is a huge project. It's the last of our harbors that we need to replace in recent decades. So we're excited to move this forward. We plan to be in construction in 2027 on this project. And the nice thing about it is we have several different pile driving activities happening in the private sector. So we might already have folks mobilized up here, which should result in some cost savings. So very excited to move forward. That'll be our big, big project in 2027, joining some of our others. I'd like to thank Ketchikan Ready Mix for getting a quick start on the McKinnon Street rehabilitation. This comes after last year's road project, which was St. Michael's. We're doing a road a year. full utility replacement, surfacing, sidewalks, and some senior center foundation upgrades. There was a water main break there yesterday, so very timely that we're actually fixing this road and its affiliated underground infrastructure. This project is moving forward. Right now, they're waiting on materials to get here, so I'm waiting on some of the HDP to arrive, and the project will be completed by fall. So we'll get back to a fully functional downtown corridor, but appreciate the public's patience. One of the neat things we did with the fill this period, and this has been a desire from the assembly for quite some time, is we repurposed that fill to fill out the shoulder of Petroglyph Beach Road. It's something, this is a little bit earlier picture, but it's actually really nicely surfaced now and roll. But it shows the widening of the right-of-way. It's almost two or three times as big now. So as visitors and community members go down there and to enjoy that, they actually have some space to park and turn around. So that costs us nothing to do that. And so appreciate the Public Works team. They did a really fine job on getting that done. And that adjoins state land on the Bangerman property there. I'd like to always also thank Public Works for going around and patching some concrete. They've done a great job taking advantage of some of the weather and conducting some concrete patches, some of which happened right on Front Street there by the close to the cul-de-sac and bathroom area, then Lower Church Street and Church Street. They're going to continue working through those patch jobs as weather allows. And things like these water main breaks certainly interrupt the work plan. But I'm thankful to have the expertise that Tom brings to the table from the concrete background, and that's being quickly deployed this summer. So thanks to Public Works for pulling off some of those concrete patches. Our public safety building project is moving forward. September is the plan for moving that project forward. We are under contract with Dawson for that facility upgrade. It'll be a complete comprehensive renovation of the exterior. So the flat roof portions of the building will be converted to slope pitched metal roofs, and this all siding and windows will be replaced. The siding will be all metal siding. This is a render of what the facility may look like. I think final colors remain to be determined, but overall it looks a lot better there in the picture than it does in real life at this point in time. So this has been a goal of the assembly for, I don't know, a couple decades, and we're pulling it off. And we got $3 million in GO bond proceeds and $2.438 million from Senator Murkowski and Representative Begich to move this project forward. We have a surplus of funds and we'll add scope as necessary. The other big project, which is over $12 million in grant funds associated with the schools, we have complete renovations of the exteriors of the high school, middle school, and elementary schools. Roofs will be replaced, siding will be replaced. McGraw and McGee Constructors out of Sitka got this job. We've had a great relationship with McGraw. They did our water treatment plant. So huge project moving forward. They had a pre-con meeting this last week, and we'll proceed with moving forward. These are long-term contracts. This isn't something the work gets done in a month. It's something that's going to be 12 to 18 months overall. Excited to move those two imperative projects forward.
Pool roof.
The pool roof is scoped into that project. So the blue tin roof, as well as the windows and above the pool there, will all be replaced as part of this. There's been water intrusion for years on flat roof and slope roof portions. So all those will be replaced as part of this project, which is really exciting. And the blue doesn't really match everything else that we're doing. So good to have some sequence there. The middle school boiler project commenced about July 23rd. And that project will be complete here in the near upcoming school year here. So nice to have that measure complete, because I know that it's been concerned. If you've seen the middle school boiler and some of the pictures that we've shared with the assembly, it's in fairly, really bad disrepair. And so nice to have that resiliency going into wintertime. We already talked about the public safety building, so we can go ahead and roll through to the next segment. Search continues their housing planning and development. Some of the folks see that along Zemovia Highway in close proximity to the Zemovia Highway mixed use area. All told, what's the unit count, Kate, for the first phase, 10 units?
For this particular development, it's 8 individual structures with additional units, because some of them are duplexes.
Yeah. So several new units being added on top of what we're doing at Aldertop. So another thing, I can't credit our economic development planning department enough for getting that PUD code in place and working through that with search. They got right to work and started developing the site. So I believe construction is estimated to be completed by March of 2027, if memory serves me correctly. So exciting to see that proceed. We had our budget produced, so you guys have printed copies in front of you. That'll be on our website under the finance department. If you're at all curious, we're beginning audit preparation for FY26 calendar year, which just ended on June 30th of this last year. And meanwhile, we're reviewing the FY25 report, and that should be submitted for the assembly's review here shortly. Additionally, secure rural schools, we found that during the election process this year, there is the ability to allocate additional proceeds directly to the borough. So one of the things we've been frustrated about is that 15% of our overall payment goes directly to the USDA Forest Service, and it was supposed to be allocated through the RACs for community-based projects. Well, the RACs haven't existed since the COVID era, so 15% basically gets stripped out and thrown away and not used here locally until those RACs become useful again. But we can allocate approximately 7% to local emergency services, so police and fire department for services, equipment, and so that should result in another 50 to 70 grand on top of our secure rural schools allocation for the next fiscal period. So great job to Finance Director Marshall for pointing that election option out this year. We continue to work on our grant administration process and getting into compliance on across all reporting timeliness. Let's scroll down to Kim. FEMA landslide reimbursements, I included this one just because it's been almost 3 years since we had the landslide, and we still have not been reimbursed in full. We've hardly actually been reimbursed at all. We have nearly 900 some odd thousand dollars of expenses to be reimbursed, but they're coming across in the next 90 days. So wanted to give you guys an update that about $900,000 of the 1.055 will be reimbursed to us here in the coming days. They have all been obligated and approved. We just noted that there's been some delays in getting the actual check across the finish line from FEMA, as is characteristic of the agency. So that's going to be nice because we've been sitting out unreimbursed for several years. Public Works continues to evaluate water quality. I know there's been certain groundwater events isolated across various areas in the community. We are testing for manganese on a quarterly level, so we're going to be continuing to do that. Manganese is present typically in these high flow event conditions, so we've noticed that in the lines that get scoured when there's high flows, and some of that organic material results in brown water, and that brown water is usually and can be indicative that there's manganese present. It's an organic compound that we all have in our system that we use need, but in healthy doses. So that's something that we're going to continue to monitor. Our consumer confidence report is published on our website, and it was out published on social media. There's a section related to brown water, and I think the Public Works Director certainly describes it better than I do, and it's all in that report. So thank you for getting that done with the water treatment plant team, Tom. We've noticed some compliance violations at the wastewater treatment facility. EPA was notified. Nothing crazy abnormal stuff like this happens. However, we did have really low flows of the wastewater plant, as you can imagine, in the really sunny conditions we experienced over the last couple of weeks. That resulted in some acidity levels weren't acceptable. And so we're looking at a proposed inline meter after the settling pond and before the outfall. But that needs to be, you know, it needs to be connected up through SCADA to the wastewater treatment plant. It also needs to be somehow heated in the winter months so the meter doesn't freeze. And we need to have the ability to have that insight so we can adjust and make adjustments at a quicker rate so as not to fall out of compliance. There's some other solutions that Public Works and the wastewater treatment plant team led by Jeffrey Davidson are working on to address the issue. And they're kind of going to troubleshoot a little bit further. We talked about the sanitation facility hours. I'll get some direction from you guys here and during assembly business. And we can go ahead and scroll down. Rango Municipal Light and Power, they continue to address some of the subdivision needs at Search. So thank them for a lot of the work they put up there. They are also pursuing overhaul of Unit 1 in September in advance of the winter months. So Unit 1 will be our fourth overhaul that we've done all together for reliability. And also in August, we have the transfer switch for the 11 megawatt power plant upgrades coming in. And by that point, we'll have a pad board, we'll have the conduit trenched in the ground, and we will be able to have 11 megawatts of output out of our power plant as opposed to 8 and change. So kind of alarming that that wasn't addressed in previous years, and it's a prior sin that we're correcting. So it's nice to know that we'll have the capacity in the unfortunate event that we have a power outage in the peak of winter.
We still have those three megawatt transformers, don't we?
Yep. And we plan to use at least one of them for, well, we will use one of them for this project. So they're sitting there. I'd like to shout out to Devin Johnson and Lucy Robinson for getting the junior lifeguards certified. We had 12 of them in an introductory course. And we had 7 new lifeguards that were also certified. So there's a picture of those folks. The pool is back open again. A lot of mechanical components addressed in the down maintenance time frame. I want to thank Lane Fitzgerald for all the maintenance that was done up there. A lot of that's behind the scenes. So appreciate all the good works at Parks and Rec. I'm going to go ahead and just keep on going because we're getting along. The Freedom Rock is a new initiative that we've taken action on. It's actually not so new because we've been talking about it for 2 years. That's the picture of the rock that was sourced from the DOT pit. The stanchions at the bottom were produced by Tyler Thompson. I want to thank him for his work at the service center. There's a lot of people to thank. But all told, we have Ray Bubba Sorensen, who's actually in the Iowa State Legislature and an artist that started the official Freedom Rock program. And this will be the first since Alaska, in the state of Alaska, and it's honoring veterans for their service in an artistic format. I've seen some initial sketches that represent the community specifically. So really nice to see the indigenous demographic represented on that, the Tlingit Code Talkers as well. Future planning, we'll host an event. Maybe it might even be around Veterans Day or something where we do some meaningful presentation unveiling of that. Very talented and really appreciate him coming to town and that being stewarded by Eric Yancey and Jen Miller. We talked about the Chugach enough, so we can go ahead and skip that one down. Met with external counsel on the sea otter management issue. Sea otter proliferation has been something that has rose to the forefront for a lot of years now. It's influenced our commercial and subsistence lifestyles here in Southeast Alaska. We have about 70 Dungeness crab fishermen here that are permitted in Wrangell, Petersburg, to the next largest community in terms of permit count. Certainly that fishery is in a disaster here in Southeast due to the proliferation of sea otters and the consolidation of the fleet. We've looked at various options on how we break through to this administration to respond to the issue. And ultimately we found an avenue to launch a petition against NIMS for not accurately or doing their statutory survey count of these otters and actually following a management plan. It's also been detrimental to some of protected species. So we are gonna look at partnering with Petersburg. I got some additional considerations to review before I bring it to the assembly for some decisions to move forward on this. But you know, we need to hold federal agencies accountable for the management of our resources here locally. Huge impact when the Dungeness crab fishery is in jeopardy here in Wrangell. So that is moving forward. It's about the only needle I can move in the near term without a legislative change in Congress. As we move ahead, shipyards at the forefront, all these major capital projects moving forward. Never have we had this much going on as a community. I don't even think the community really realizes the amount of construction that will be taking place over the next 18 months. There's going to be a lot of contractors in town. There's new jobs being created here locally, new industry. There's new footprints. The area that we'll be managing and creating economic development opportunities. And really we've become the envy of Southeast because everybody's so pessimistic and cynical about the regional outlook. So it's been really neat to be a shining light in Southeast. And I'm really proud of the assembly and the administrative team for being cohesive and having a vision for the direction of our community. So sorry for a long management report, but I told you I'd only do one out of every month and this is that. So I'd entertain any questions, and I thank everybody for all their work.
4 years ago, we announced Wrangell was open for business, and with our economic development director and all the directors, I think we've made that known. So, any questions, comments, Assembly? Assembly Member Powell.
Well, sparked a thing when you talked about the landslide. Reimbursement stuff. We bought and purchased a lot of equipment.
Yes.
And it's getting aging. Maybe we should look at surplusing a lot of that.
I'd have to look at the regulations on surplusing equipment. Sometimes there's a time horizon applied to that. Otherwise, you have to reimburse the agency for what they spent on it.
Okay.
But we can look at doing that.
Yeah, because I think you have I'll be multiple generators, and they're just going to go to crap if you don't do something with them.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully, one of our goals was to maintain all of our equipment. Hopefully, they are being maintained yearly.
They currently are. They're being stored adequately, too. However,
they run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But however, to maintenance, you know, 40 Honda 2000 Yamahas, kind of a pain. And there's not really a permissible use for us unless there is a large disaster. So something for consideration in the future. Thanks for that.
Any other comments, questions? All right, let's move on to borough clerk's file.
I don't have a lot. Remember for the public and assembly and such, we have three elections coming up. We have the August primary election. Early voting starts here in the assembly chambers August 3rd through the 17th. Election day will be at the Nolan Center. I believe it's from 7 to 7 on August 18th. And then our October local election absentee voting will be happening in my office starting September 21st through October 5th from 8 to 4. And then October 6th is the election, and that's from 8 to 8 at the Nolan Center. The November election, general election, will be, November 3rd. Absentee voting here in the chambers will be October 19th through the 2nd. And then please remember we have for the elected officials, that'll be on the October election, the borough mayor seat, two-year term, two borough assembly seats, three-year terms. School board is one 3-year term. Port commission, we have one 3-year term, and a port commission one 2-year unexpired term. And then what was I going to say? I forgot. I forgot. I can't remember what I was going to say. Does anybody have any questions? I was going to say something about the election.
Any questions? I forgot. All right, hearing none. Let's move along. Item 9, Mayor and Assembly Business. I believe one item was the sanitation department's hours of operation, as explained to us by our Public Works Director. Was that satisfactory to the Assembly?
So the one comment I would like to make, Madam Mayor, on the sanitation facility hours is if we do it, it's going to be a bit more inconsistent. Like we can certainly service the lunchtime hour when we have the staffing levels to do so. If we don't, as for example, when moose hunting season comes around, we always lose some sanitation employees. But we're going to have to pull from the parking lot because it's all overtime, or we'll have to say, well, the lunch hour is gone that day. And we have to provide a lunch hour for the bucket marketing thing, but that's not going to take.
Any comments, Assembly? Assembly Member Yeager?
Thank you. I would have to say that consistent hours would be a lot better with the public. I know for myself, knowing when it's going to be there and not switching back and forth prevents a lot of time where you drive around with your truck full of stuff and thinking that it's open and it's not. So, if you're creating an opportunity to have to switch hours back and forth all the time, I think it's a bad thing.
Thank you. Any other assembly members on that? Do I have it?
Do we have a nod of heads that
received with current operations?
Satisfactory.
Okay.
Okay. Yep.
Thank you for bringing up the point.
All right. Any other assembly business?
It was mentioned in the work session to potentially direct the Port Commission to consider an alternative analysis for the Marine Service Center expansion. Is that something that you guys would want to consider moving forward with?
I think we can alert the Port Commission to go ahead with that, but I think they have time.
They have time. Yeah. I just think it's going to go by fairly quickly. We know what the legislative process looks like here. I want to be prepared for when we have a filled out footprint.
So for the public, we're talking about the extra acreage that the Marine Service Center will gain as we do the fill out here in front. So whether that's for storage or for operations and work, and I think that the Nolan Center would like to see actual work going on as close to the waterfront as possible, because the tourists and I enjoy looking at that, watching the progress. Do you have any comment, Assemblymember Yeager?
Yes, ma'am. I feel it'd be very prudent for us to let the Port Commission and Steve come up with a recommendation. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see that in his responses. What does he recommend for the best use of whatever we can produce as far as the land out there? To your point about tourism out there, it would be a much safer opportunity for people to watch from behind the Nolan Center than to actually walk into that Marine Service Center. Mm-hmm. Having dealt with that for a lot of years, it's a huge safety concern for not only the people in the Marine Service Center, but also when AML's moving trading containers and so forth. So,
right.
Yeah.
Good point. All right. Any other business? All right, Assembly, let's move here. Next item is on page 324. We have an opening on the Planning and Zoning Commission with the resignation of Dixie Hutchison. We don't have anyone indicating that they'd like to join, but if they do, to contact our clerk.